Almost perpetual rotation.
Humsi,
under the unto the living entity.
Harsha.
Harsha.
Jubilation.
Jubilation.
Soka.
Soka.
Lamentation.
Lamentation.
Bhaya.
Bhaya.
Fear.
Fear.
Arti.
Arti.
Misery.
Misery.
Dham.
Dham.
Which gives.
Which gives.
Translation of subtle bodies endowed with 16 parts, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses, 5 objects of the sense gratification in the mind. This subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, and therefore it causes the living entity to transmit from one body to another in human life, animal life, man life, as demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he's certainly very jubilant. When he gets the body of a human, he's always in lamentation. When he gets the body of an animal, he's always afraid. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. The miserable condition has caused some certainty of transmigration in material life. Per part, the sum of substance of material condition of life is explained in this verse. The living entity in the 17th element is struggling alone, life after life. This struggle is called samsriti, or material conditional life. The Bhagavad Gita says the force of material nature is strong, material nature harasses the living entity in different bodies, but if the living entity surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God and becomes free from this entanglement, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mameva e prapajante mayam ekam shravyate, thus his life becomes successful. Text 52, the foolish embodied living entity, inept at controlling his senses and mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the mode material nature against his desires. He is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon and then becomes trapped in it with no possibility of getting out. Living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus, he is always bewildered and repeatedly he dies. As explained, we've already explained the influence of the modes of nature is very strong. The living entity, entangled in different types of food and activities, like a silkworm trapped in a cocoon, getting free is very difficult unless he's not by his extreme personality of Godhead. So this is a further description of the living entity in the material world. Here the senses and the sense objects and the mind are described as the components of the subtle body. Of course, we also have false ego, etc., intelligence, the jiva actually is a pure entity, particle of consciousness, shakti of the Lord, but it comes in contact with maya and has a covering, or upadi on it, made out of all of these things, that is, the mind, etc. And in addition to this, we also have things like time and karma, which are stuck to the living entity. So all this creates covering on the living entity, even though he's pure. And then from this, we get the gross manifestation, that is, the gross material body. So, the desires are in the mind, but originally the ultimate desire is coming from the Atman, because it is the conscious being. The mind itself is a material, but it holds so many desires, etc. So, in contact with the subtle body and the gross body, the living entity begins to act in this material world. He fulfills his desires, and he gets some objects of the material world, and he may think he's enjoying, and sometimes he gets things he doesn't want, and then he suffers. Meanwhile, by the activities, he gets karma, or daiva, and he gets results in the future, which will determine his next body. So he goes from this body, he leaves this gross body, and along with the subtle body, the jiva then goes to another body. So it is compared to a plant producing a seed, and then the seed again is planted, and it produces another plant, this produces another seed, this produces another plant. So we have the body, then we do activities, and this leads us into another body. And then in that body, we do activities again, and then that produces karma, produces another body. So this way, there's a continual progression of action and body, action and body, action and body. And it never begins, never ends. So this is what is called the samsriti, or the, let's say, the cycle or progression of the jiva in the material world, or samsara. This is sometimes represented by a wheel. So why a wheel? Because if you go around on the surface and trace it, you can trace that circle forever, and there's no beginning and no end to it. It just goes on and on and on. So similarly, the birth and death of the living entity of the material world is like that. It goes on and 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 on. And we don't find a beginning, we don't find an end. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita says, very difficult to get out of this cycle. Mama Maya Dharateya. So all of this is the effect of Maya. Maya has two portions. Of course, Maya is one Shakti of the Lord. The other Shakti, of course, is the Tadastra Shakti, the Jiva. And of course, we have the spiritual Shakti of the Lord, the Chit Shakti. But the Tadastra Shakti is such that he can begin influence or fall under the material energy. So there's a certain type of jiva that is like that. That is the Bahirmukha jiva, or the Nityabhaga. Some jivas aren't like that. They are called the Nityamuktas. So they have the very special blessing of the Lord that they never get influenced by material energy at all. But there's others who do. So they are the Nityabhagas in the material world. So without beginning, without end, they go from birth to death, birth to death, birth to death. So we may accuse the Lord of being unfair, but the whole purpose of Bhagavatam is to show that the Lord is merciful to the jivas in the material world. So he does not leave them. So he creates the material world because they desire it. And then he enters into the material world to guide them in many ways. So he's there as Paramatma, he comes as avatar, he sends devotees, he leaves scripture, etc. So in many ways, the Supreme Lord wants to help the jivas in the material world. So the nature of the jiva in the material world is mysterious, because definitely he is stuck in the material world with no beginning, and therefore looks helpless, and is called Dorathya, very difficult to get out. But still, one can get out by the mercy of the Lord. But the mercy of the Lord depends on the jiva himself. The Lord is merciful to everybody, but to get the mercy, to get out of the material world, the jiva has to do something. So if he does that one something, he gets out. The mercy that comes to the person who does bhakti, then he gets out. So the jiva is stuck in the material world under the influence of this Maya Shakti, the Bahiranga Shakti. And it has many devices to create bondage for the jiva. It has the very subtle devices. That is time, karma, the given actions, the given reactions, and action itself. And the capacity for the karma and the actions to stick to the jiva, also bhava. These are all very subtle things, they're not material things, but they're part of maya. Then we have the gross maya, that is prakriti, which in combination with kala and jiva and all karma starts producing mahatattva, ahankara, gross material elements, senses, sense objects, etc. So that's the material substance, upada, prakriti. So maya has these two sections, that is the subtle section and the gross section. And together they cover up the jiva in the material world. And they stick to the jiva. And therefore he takes body after body in the material world. So they are the cause of this bondage in the material world. Still, the Lord gives some hope, because within maya itself we have, of course, two functions. One is avidya that we know about, ignorance. All of these things are coverings that create ignorance. But we have another function called vidya, which is also part of maya. This is the good part of maya. It's material, but knowledge can help us elevate in the material world. And it becomes a door to spiritual, real spiritual elevation in the material world. So within maya itself is a little bit of a trap door by which we can get out. And then we get spiritual knowledge from devotees, and then we can actually get out of the material world. So though the Nityabhata Jiva is in a very helpless position, birth after birth, in ignorance, etc., the Lord provides for him. He gives vidya also, so if we get vidya, then we get some chance to get out. And then he provides devotees, he provides processes, he provides scripture, becomes his avatar, he gives the name, etc. And in these ways, he helps the jiva to escape from the material world. So, the jiva is by nature tatashta. He is different from the Lord. He never becomes the Lord. So, he can get rid of his coverings and go to his pure state. But, he remains with his particular qualities as a tatashta shakti, as a jiva. That is, he remains anu, individual particle. He is still conscious, but he maintains his identity, the sense of I. Just as we have the sense of I in the material world, which is, of course, transferred to the body, I am this body. Without that covering, still we have a sense of I. We Atma identifies himself as a center of knowledge. And that Atma in its pure state is a knower, is an enjoyer or experiencer, and is a doer, an actor. These are all propensities of the jiva in his liberated state. So these, of course, may or may not function in the liberated state. If one goes for jnana or yoga, these functions are minimal. If one performs bhakti, then his knowing, his acting, and his experiencing become fully manifest. So that is the process of bhakti. It helps us develop the Atma as a spiritual entity with these capacities and qualities. Whereas the other processes don't do that, even though one can get liberation with them. So, in this way the jiva can get out of this whole problem in the material world. So the Yamadutas are describing here the position of the jiva in the material world, and how helpless he is, stuck in the material world because of all this. And he has no way of getting out of this process. So, still, there is a way, which is presented by the Vishnudutas. Now, the Yamadutas' way of helping the living entities in the material world is to punish them. This is a discipline for the jivas who do the sinful acts. So it is not an evil job, it's actually a duty they're doing. This is also part of the Lord's mercy, to help the jivas. If there were no karma, and everybody could do any act they wanted, they get no punishment at all for it, then the whole world would be completely topsy-turvy. Everyone would get more and more sinful, and everyone would decline more and more. So there are certain principles the Lord arranges. The law of karma is there, so that one does get reactions. And in conjunction with that, we have the laws of Yamaraj, which enforce the laws of karma. So there is a balance in the material world. And this prevents the jivas from erring too much. It puts a limit on how far they can go in their activities. If they go so far, then they get out of the human body, they go to lower species of life, they become trees or animals or something. And then there's no worry for them. So there's preventative measures the Lord takes to control the enjoying tendency of the jiva in the material world. So that is one form of mercy of the Lord also. But above that, of course, then we do have the other types of mercy, which take some conscious effort on the jiva's part. So we have systems introduced, such as the Vajrasana system, elevation through karma yoga. But that has limitations, it's all in the gunas. Then we have the higher processes of jnana and yoga, and then finally bhakti. So these are the processes by which a jiva can get rid of the suffering in the material world. And of course, ultimately the best process is bhakti. And in this particular case, we see that chanting the name of the Lord is even extraordinary. So extraordinary that the Yamadutas were surprised at the effect that that had. They didn't understand that in spite of all the sinful activities, the accidental chanting of the name actually destroyed all of the karmas. So the Lord does give many ways in which the jiva can be relieved of his suffering in the material world. So he's not indifferent, he's very, very merciful to the jivas.
Let's see, jiva are the particular entity of Supreme Lord, and the Mayadevi is the external of the Supreme Lord. Both are the enemies of the Supreme Lord. But how and this Mayadevi is inferior than this Kapratha Shakti? Inferior than Kapratha Shakti?
Well, Maya Shakti itself is unconscious, it's Achit.
My question is
Achit Shakti.
Achit Shakti, but still inferior than this Kapratha Shakti.
Huh?
Inferior.
Yeah. Yeah, it's inferior because it's Achit.
Achit.
Where at the jiva is chit.
Yeah. So how this inferior energy control over the superior energy? Because
the jiva is anu.
Yeah, only.
And he's also tatashta by nature. Can be influenced. He can become attracted to enjoying it.
He has two options then.
Yeah. So he would say he's superior in the sense he's conscious. He's not superior that he's more powerful. But the chit shakti, of course, is. That's completely separate. Never touched by the material energy. The Supreme Lord is never touched by the material energy. And the nityasiddha jivas, or the mukta jivas, are never touched also. Because they are endowed with the chit shakti of the Lord.
How is it limited by the two yogas of
jnana?
How is it limited by jnana and yoga?
What
then?
Jiva?
Yeah, the jiva has this
noah,
experiencer, and
yoga. Well, if one gets liberation, one becomes consciousness. And we don't perceive things anymore. We're all one.
So we don't have an object of perception. So not, we're not a knower. We are knowledge without being a knower. This is one of the principles of Advaita philosophy. The jiva is a knower. It's not a knower. It's only knowledge. Chinmatra. Brahman is Chinmatra. It doesn't know anything. It is knowledge itself. That's it. Knowledge. It doesn't know anything because there's nothing else there anyway. It's all illusion. So it is only eternal knowledge. It doesn't know anything. So that is the goal of the yogis and the jnanis, to realize they are knowledge itself. So they don't know anything, what to speak of, do anything. Because doing implies change, so they don't want any change also. What's the sense of experience anything? And blissful, they are not blissful, they are bliss itself. So they're not blissful because of something, it is bliss.
So all these limitations to the soul are because the desire of the soul to be so.
What's that?
The limitations to the soul, the jnana and the yogi, are because of the desire of the jnana and the yogi.
Yeah, they desire to have that type of perfection, of simply being, that's all. How do we realize the tendency? Tendency become judgmental and criticizing the devotees while practicing bhakti. Well, the nature of the jiva, of course, is in the material world. The conditioned jiva is to look after himself at the expense of others. On the other hand, the person practicing bhakti is trying to simply serve the Supreme Lord and show compassion to other jivas and help them also serve the Supreme Lord. So anything to do that is wonderful. And anything which detracts from that, of course, is the opposite. So therefore, if we criticize other devotees, that's called sadhu-ninda. And that is detrimental to the progress of bhakti. So the true devotee, rather than criticize, he wants to help devotees advance. Of course, we can say criticism is also helpful. Generally, it doesn't help too much. In most cases, it doesn't help the person at all. And it doesn't help us either. So rather than be critical, if we want to do something for a devotee, we have to do something positive. Now certainly, as a Madhvacharya, he has to judge devotees and see their level. Because if he doesn't, then his association will be incorrect. In other words, he has to see who is a Kanishka, who is a Madhyama, who is an Uttama. So that's not being critical. He has to see the level of the devotee, and accordingly he relates with that particular person. So with those who are less and are probably making mistakes, then he tries to educate them. And to those who are equal, then of course they discuss things in an equal way. And to those who are superior, then they take knowledge. So that is the general process for advancement.
If one is dharma which is already manifest, it says that once an excellent child of the name of the Lord, that's called dharma. But the dharma that is manifest still remains.
Sir?
The dharma which is manifested, the reaction that is manifested, will continue to be there.
Oh, okay, yes and no. Technically, everything is destroyed, past, present, future, in the case of Ajahn. He won't accidentally channel. All of his karmas were destroyed. And therefore, couldn't touch him. Nothing, Yamadutas couldn't touch him. If he still had karmas, then there would have been effect. Now, of course, the opposing argument would be, well, he still had suffering, he still died, so that's the karma. Huh? So that is the exception in one sense. Yes, all the Prabhas are destroyed, but the Lord keeps a pattern of karma for most jivas. In some cases he doesn't, because he's eager to meet them and he wants them to end their state of material world quickly, so then all the karmas disappear and they disappear. So in most cases, the karmas are not destroyed. In the case of Ajmila, it was not destroyed, but a pattern was left. Anyway, in the case of devotees, that pattern is left in order that the devotees stay in the material world and spread the message of the Lord. Because otherwise, if everyone got rid of the karmas and they disappeared, then there's no devotees there. So for that reason, he keeps it. And to show that the law of karma should be followed by everybody, regardless. He gives some patterns, but it's not actually the same karma. It's under the Lord at that point. It's not under the control of, you know, Maya anymore at that point. So whatever traces are there are not real karma.
I asked this question because when the actions come, they appear so real.
Mm-hmm.
When any karma comes, it appears so real because at least all the sense of the mind can perceive it directly.
Yeah.
Very, very realistic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everything is real, definitely, so the pattern is there. Of course, we also do not know what is karma and what is not karma. Some things are not actually karma, and some things are karma, so we can't distinguish also that.
Maharaj,
mercy of the Lord. Aparad Ravi threatens me regarding my spiritual life, but when situations such as arise, without my will commit Aparad, how can I avoid that spiritual life of Aparad? Well, the warning is always there, that beware of Vaishnava Aparad, etc. So we have to keep that in mind all the time. And, of course, it has various degrees, according to deliberate or accidental, and according to how serious the Aparad is, according to the person who offends. All of these are also factors involved. But in any case, it always creates obstacle for us. It may not destroy bhakti, but it will slow our process to some degree. So therefore, we always have to be careful. So the counter to that is, the way one can counteract that is to always serve the Vaishnavas, always have a positive attitude towards the devotee in comparison to the people of the material world. And we should understand that because the person has accepted bhakti, he's not an ordinary jiva in the material world and have proper respect for them. So if we see with those eyes, then we can help to avoid the aparadas. Not in the normal sense, because Vaishnava Aparad is actually intentional harm to that person out of envy. So that is where the Aparad becomes serious.
At the time of mass migration, the stone of holding the sacred body to the body, or the body holding the body, or any other thing as part of the mass migration?
Well, they go together. It's not one pulls the other, they go together. They're stuck to each other. And due to the karmas, then they're put in a certain body.
When we are doing service,
that time many senior also, and if you say something which is not pleasant, you are not right about
it.
Some seniors say something which is not pleasant while doing service,
yeah.
That's a commander. Say,
who gets the upper round? The senior gets to do the upper round. The junior is feeling upper round in the other person. What is it? Which way?
The junior getting the upper round.
By getting criticized by a person.
He has to sometimes say something.
Why not? To the superior.
He's criticizing him.
No, but when the junior is criticizing or telling something
not viable by the senior, the junior may.
No, but when the service is not rendered, if you say things are not pleasing to the superior.
Yeah.
So is it a thousand or often? Because you have to be open. And
well, it's not intentional. If you're intentionally trying to displease them by doing the wrong thing, then of course it would be. If you're not, then you can't consider that an operat. It's your intention that counts.
But also the intention they take of the event.
Hmm?
How they take it?
Or the other person interprets it, or he takes it.
Well, that's there, but we can't do anything, we can't control that. We have no control over that. So that's not our fault.
Source can be character from the victim of the same character. Hmm? Huh? Suppose a person is carrying some character from the same body. The same character is carried from the extreme one or
not? Well, there's always change. We hope there's change. If there's no change for millions of lives, that continue the same and the same and the same. We hope there's some progress somewhere. That's the whole point of karma.
But knowledge is carried. Huh? Knowledge is carried. Whatever knowledge we
have, how do we get it? Yeah, we hope it is. Sometimes people forget also, though.
No, the reason is some people, when they're very young, they get a lot of knowledge. That may be because of their previous.
Could be.
Could be.
Yeah, sometimes they do. They previous lifetime they have the knowledge, so they get it this lifetime also.
Grantra Sushma Bhagavatam ki. Sushmanalaki. Yuajdi Bhakti.
Poi sentare di sì. No, no, no.